Welcome to the Simply His Coffee Shop. We are so excited that you're joining us again today. I'm Catherine Horn. Allie and Donna were not able to be with us today, so we have two other special guests sitting in for them. My daughter, Nita Lee.
Hi.
And then my other daughter, Kate Taylor. And then we have some very, very amazing guests that are very, very special to me and to my daughters. My parents are here to visit with us. This is Becky Sperry. And my dad, Ray Sperry.
Yay.
We're so excited to be able to have my parents on today, partly because I grew up as a missionary kid, and I know some of the viewers, if you've watched some of the other shows, you've seen that I've kind of spoken about that. And in the article that I've written for the magazine, it also kind of talked about it. But we wanted to have them on because missionaries are so important, yeah. And we all know that. So we thought it would be a really fun opportunity for me and for them to kind of talk about missions and how that affected them and how they wanted to even become a missionary, because I know a lot of kids going to camp and everything, you know, they come back and they say, oh, God called me to be a missionary to Africa. Oh, God called me to be a missionary over here. So we thought it would be a really fun opportunity to have them come on and talk about the calling and how they kind of answered that call to become missionaries and be obedient. So when did you guys feel that God was calling you into even just the ministry?
Well, when I was about 10 years old, a little younger than Nita, we had a missionary at our church, and they were missionaries to South America. Mm-hmm. And I just felt in that service like God was speaking to my heart, right, and saying, you know, wouldn't it be fun to be a missionary? And so that just planted a seed. And then when I graduated from high school, I thought, oh, I'll do something else, you know. But I went to stay with my second sister, and she said, Becky, you have to go to youth camp. You absolutely have to go to youth camp.
Well, weren't they kind of running some of the youth camps there for a while?
No, they weren't. They just
helped out.
They
a lot
were
with it.
Pastors, and there was a group of young men, a quartet from Northwest College, and so they had to leave on the Wednesday. And one of the young men said to me, I'll see you at Northwest next fall. I thought, yeah, right. Like, I have any money. But anyway, that day and that night, through the rest of the day and that night, it was like evangelism, mm-hmm, and missions was the emphasis. Right. And I answered the call. Awesome. And I saw him at Northwest that fall.
That is very cool. What about you, Dad?
Well, first of all, my parents were converted to Christ when I was probably around 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And I view it as fortunate that I grew up in the environment of an evangelical Christian home. Mm-hmm. And we were also participating in a church that placed a good amount of emphasis on missions.
Right.
In fact, the Christian and Missionary Alliance.
Oh, wow.
Church network. And so I grew up being exposed to that kind of ministry. Mm-hmm. And if I were to identify some factors that kind of put the motivation into action, I think I could recount three motivations. First of all, the theological one. I really believed this gospel stuff as a young guy.
Right.
And the mandate of missions is to go.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
spread
there the were word. Some ways that was presented to me. If this mandate is so clear, you almost need a call to stay home rather than to go, because the mandate is to go.
Right.
Number two, there was the statistical component, and I was deeply impacted by the ratio of need for the gospel in the world.
Yeah.
In the form of the 90% versus 10% ratio.
Right.
I learned that approximately 90% of the world's population was still unexposed to the biblical gospel, whereas only 10% had it, you might say.
Yeah.
And then you also add to that the ministry aspect of that, because 90% of all Christian ministries gave all their attention to 10% of the world's population. You see how that stacked up to be a pretty compelling component. I suppose number three point of motivation for me, I don't know what was wrong with me. Maybe I was some kind of a weird kid, but I was wired weird. For adventure. And yes, and I viewed a missionary cross-cultural experience was just I don't know, a lifestyle of adventure.
Yeah.
And man, did I ever get my fill.
Yes.
And so I'm also inclined to believe that sense of adventure went a long way toward removing anything in the form of culture shock. You know, you hear people talk about, you know, and I've seen it with my own eyes, culture shock in action. You know, I don't want to eat that, or I don't. And they're afraid of the heat. They're afraid of the bugs. Right. They're afraid of this and that. And I never was afflicted with that. How can you have culture shock when you're having a blast? Anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
So much fun.
Becky, have you got anything to say about the adventure that you guys have been on?
I'll say this. One time when we came home for a deputation, I told Ray, I said, if any of our family ask us to go camping, I'm not going.
Awesome.
But she still camps.
When she has to. When you drag her along. So I know, even though you were having a wonderful adventure and you were kind of living out your dream of being able to be adventurous, but I know, because I was there for some of it, not maybe all of it, but a lot of it, there was also a lot of trials and tribulations and challenges that you guys had to deal with too. What were some of those that probably stick out the most?
I do remember when we went to the Marshall Islands. That was our first tour. We were 2 years in the Marshall Islands, and then we went to the Solomon Islands, and then we went to Panape, then we went to Vanuatu. Before we went to the Marshall Islands, we were told by missionaries who had been there that we would have this really nice house. It was brand new, and it was right on the lagoon, you know, so you have all these, you know, visions. Well, when we got there, we went on to the campus, and then we went through it, and it wasn't very nice looking, you know. And it sure wasn't on the lagoon. And they said, okay, this is your house. And it was older, and it was not on the lagoon. And I thought, what in the world is going on? You know? But it turned out to be okay. It was fine. And later on, we did move to the house on the lagoon. But one of the missionaries had decided, or a couple of them, they were single gals, had decided that they wanted to live on the lagoon. And so we were the newcomers and the temporary people, so we got to have the house on the campus.
But so that kind of threw a wrench in stuff.
You know, you have all these visions, and sometimes your visions don't materialize like you first imagined.
Well, it's very difficult for me to even identify any things that made me regret our course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was, like I say, an adventurous learning experience. But I will say as well that I tried to pre-program my little head.
Yeah.
Prepare myself for this cross-cultural experience. And I predetermined that I was going to eat anything they eat.
Yeah.
Therefore, that wasn't
Right.
That wasn't a bummer. Right. And I could sleep wherever they sleep and basically do whatever they do.
Yeah.
And in fact, maybe I even came close to excelling in some of the things that they do. Not the least of which was spearfishing.
Yes.
Part of that adventure allowed me to engage in probably more spearfishing than most anyone on the planet, you know, so it was an ongoing adventure.
Well, and I know you had mentioned when we were kind of talking about the show how that actually gave you a platform, because I remember that they used to call him the crazy white guy because he would do things that no, even the islanders wouldn't do, like some of the distances that he would take a small boat and go, they wouldn't even do that. So he was kind of known as the white crazy guy on some of it. But you also had that kind of, with the spearfishing and stuff, that gave you / our family an opportunity to use that kind of as a ministry too, because then we were helping provide fish for them, because we would catch a bunch of fish because my dad and my brothers were very good spear fishermen.
Yeah.
And or even we just go trolling, which is with a line and stuff, and we would give what we couldn't eat away. So, you know, we'd have big cookouts or just say, hey, anybody want some fish? So it gave them an opportunity to give back to the islanders instead of the islanders just taking care of us. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gave you a good platform for that as well, to be able to minister.
Well, it was fun to kind of turn those cultural tables and be the missionary that gave fish to the locals rather than the locals who typically give fish to the missionary. And so, and it was fun to go through the protocol of the island culture. And, you know, when you did have fish to make sure that you direct some fish to the chief of the village or chief of the island. And I'm afraid that won some points for me.
That's good.
It was fun.
So I know you guys went to the Marshall Islands first, and that was before my time. I wasn't born yet. Just my older sister. And then you had Andy there. And then where else did you go? After that, it was the Solomons. And then where?
Ponape.
Then Ponape, and then...
Solomons again.
Solomons again.
And Vanuatu.
And then what did you see that God did at each of those places? What did he show you guys, or what did you learn from that? And what was the main purpose of what you guys were doing? Were you building and planting churches? Were you doing the Bible schools? What were you doing?
Let me say this up front. I think it's real difficult to put forth and identify a bunch of great achievements as though I'm some kind of a missionary superstar.
Well, that's not you anyways. Yeah, you've never been that way.
I would say my main concern, I suppose my heart was in the vein of discipleship training. I have been around enough, shall we say, heavy emphasis evangelism so as to see a lot of evidence of that being almost the end, where Jesus clearly said, go ye therefore and teach all nations, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. So the biblical mandate for the gospel is not just to present the gospel and you remake a decision and you pray the sinner's prayer, but there has to be an ongoing growth, grow in grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That came to be a big need. In fact, I guess I've had the misfortune, if you please, to see a lot of people inside the church who act real Christian inside the walls of the church, but in the marketplace, some of them are crooked as dog's hind legs, you know. And so we all need the biblical instruction on how to be followers of Christ consistently.
That's great.
That became our forte. So we did involve ourselves in beginning in the Solomon Islands, for example, a Bible training center that we called the School of Christian Leadership. And and that became a good thing. And some of our students are still have come up to be great leaders in that that country. So it's hard to know how to, you know, feature our trophies, you know, identify our trophies, you know. And I think Paul stated it well when he said that, you know, Paul planted and Apollos watered. It's God that gives the increase. So
yes, yes.
I have no idea how much we contributed to the increase. I think the name of the game is just to do what you can where you are, as mm-hmm. long as you're there, and let God add his increase.
Amen. So, very good.
And I leave it there.
Little Nita Lee had a question for you.
Yeah. So while you guys were missionaries, did you have to learn any other languages?
We were first in the Marshall Islands and we were there for 2 years only. That was kind of our...
Get your feet wet.
Yeah, our introduction to overseas ministry. And had we been there for longer, I think I could have got that language down, the Marshallese language, a bit more fluently. But when we shifted then to the Solomon Islands, which is a Melanesian people group as opposed to Micronesian, you know, there's different people groups in the Pacific. The Melanesia tends to be fragmented with all kinds of tribes. Tribalism is a big thing. So tribal languages, in fact, there could be hundreds of different tribal languages in a place like the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu, and then up on into Papua New Guinea. And over the years, a kind of a universal language has developed, because my little head is not capable of comprehending more than one, or, you know, a couple languages or something. So Pidgin English, and that derives from, you might say, an Australian version of the slave trade. So that there were islanders who were conscripted to work on Australian plantations under English-speaking masters without any formal exposure to the English language. And so, you know, they just pick up bits and pieces of English, and they string it together. And over the years, it's become a language in its own right. So I think had blue you fala herem save tok tok blome vala be gol same naya. I'm now tok blumivala, yeah. But it was of great benefit to have that universal, the trade language, because it allowed us to communicate everywhere, and no matter what village or island we went to, we could make use of the Pidgin English.
It's great.
Really cool.
Yeah. Kate, did you have a question as well?
Yes, I was actually wondering if you guys encountered any hostility from any of the locals, or just any kind of like standoff behavior.
We didn't so much from the locals and going in. I do remember one time in the Solomons, we went into a new village, and some of the people didn't want us to go in there because they were of a different church. And so there was tribalism with, you know, if you're at this church, then, you know, the other church, another church can't come in. But I think in my spirit, I felt more like it was Satan trying to keep us out, you know, of that village. And there was, you know, kind of a feeling of hostility, but we left unscathed. What is really sad is when there was some hostility in the church toward us, because they didn't want, we were trying to bring on, you know, more Christian type procedures in the church and things, and there were some people that just didn't like it. They didn't want us, you know, they wanted to do it their way, and they didn't want to have us, you know, mess with what they wanted to do. And we did have to leave the Solomons in 1986 because of the conflict in the church itself, which is sad, you know. But then we did go back later, and things had smoothed out. But,
Yeah. Well, I was actually born in the Solomon Islands.
I remember.
Do you remember? Well.
Guadalcanal, no less.
Number 11 hospital.
Yeah.
And Guadalcanal was very,
important.
Big and important in World War II and stuff. So I was actually born there. But what was it like raising us kids there? And what did you guys have to go through with raising us kids? Because, I mean, that's really hard raising kids anywhere. But in a third world country where medical can sometimes be an issue. And how did that work?
Well, in the Marshalls, I had her older brother. And it was quite interesting. Ray had to kick a dog out from under the bed next to me before I got into the bed. And then a nurse yelled at me because I was a white woman and I should be able to get up and make my bed and everything like that, you know, and keep the ward very neat, you know. So that was interesting. And then, and because Ray had killed the administrator's pig, that birth cost us $35. And then
oops.
Catherine cost us $12 and a pumpkin.
Oh.
Old pumpkin.
Well, that's how much I'm worth, $12 and a pumpkin.
There you go. Sharice has had it right all along. Old pumpkin.
But I do know that some missionary wives would prefer to come back home to have their children.
Mm-hmm.
But Ray and I talked about it, and we felt like if there's anything islanders know how to do, it's to have children.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't, you know, there wasn't any danger. I'm sure if there had been, you know, I had some real physical complications or something, we, you know, would have come home. But it was all normal and natural, and it was okay. I would say schooling was the hardest thing for our kids.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't go to the local schools either for language or their it was lower than what our
standards
were. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so the kids had all kinds of experiences with schooling, most of it homeschool.
Yeah.
But that was probably one of the biggest problems, in raising the children.
Well, we are down to about 2 minutes, so we have to kind of get ready to wrap this up. So do you have anything last minute that you'd like to throw out there to the audience and encouraging them on maybe how to get involved in missions or answering that call?
Well, firstly, I was going to respond, hitchhike on this other topic. And
okay.
I think any father and husband is going to be concerned about,
of course,
taking that step over cultural fences. And I think I'm grateful as a kid that my mother had the foresight to kind of force me to memorize Proverbs 3, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and I still to this day promote Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 as a kind of a biblical GPS for doing life.
Yeah.
And there comes a place where you've got to trust in the Lord. How much? A little bit? All your heart. And lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He directs paths. He has ways to direct. And I've never been able to feel like God is directing me very profoundly in the here and now. But when I look in the rearview mirror, I see evidence of His guidance in His ordering our steps.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's been a good thing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, we are so happy that you guys agreed to do this with us.
Yes.
It's such a pleasure for me getting to be able to host this and have you on as my parents and get to the bottom of this too. And we just encourage you, if you have a heart for missions, you can do it. It's not as hard as it seems. Mm-hmm. God will be there to help guide you and carry you through whatever it is that He is calling you to do. We'll see you next time at the Simply His Coffee Shop. I'm Catherine Horn.
Nabu lo ihe venki ke angi, neru usafanua ihe ven.
Millions of Americans are suffering a health crisis epidemic right now, completely unnecessarily. But what if I told you it didn't have to be this way? The truth for many is that the real culprit of modern disease is simply a lack of God-given knowledge. In Unlocking Eden, we provide hopeful, scientifically supported revelations regarding how you can access freedom from the bondages of disease. SkyWatch TV is proud to announce the Unlocking Eden Special Collection. From the importance of detoxification, circadian rhythm, intermittent fasting, and unburdening metabolic pathways to maximizing immunity, methylation, and absolute essentials like quality sleep, Unlocking Eden is filled cover to cover with groundbreaking information that can help unlock the body's natural healing mechanisms, which can revolutionize your health and your life. We're also including the never-before-released special edition Eden's Essentials publication featuring special reports on gut health, chronic pain and sleep management, fermented foods, and so much more. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of over $150. Yours now for a donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. So revolutionize your health, maximize your immunity, and restore your vitality. The Unlocking Eden Special Collection, available now at the SkyWatch TV store online. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.